Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner.
And I'm Anthony McCarthy.
The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range. I already said that one. I apologize.
You did.
The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by the University of Maryland Division of Transplantation, where patients' lives are enhanced by a renowned transplant program known for innovation and excellence in kidney, liver, and pancreas transplants. For more information, 1-800-492-5538 or click on to their banner on the Steiner Show website. And before we jump into our conversation, I want to invite you all to join me 2 days from now, Wednesday morning, January the 12th, at the Calvert House in Annapolis for our 8th annual Annapolis Summit. Governor Martin O'Malley, Senate President Mike Miller, and House Speaker Michael Bush. From 8 in the morning till 10 in the morning, you'll be there, be part of that. You can ask your questions of our leaders. We want you in the audience. Call 410-454-0500. 410-454-0500 or summit@steinershow.org to reserve your seat. This is sponsored by the Greater Baltimore Committee, Stevenson University, and the Maryland State Education Association, our print partners at the Baltimore Business Journal, of course, WEA and Morgan State University as well. We want you to join us there, be part of that discussion. It'll be filmed by the Mayor's Channel, Channel 25, be shown all across the state, on the web, heard here, and on public radio on the Eastern Shore. And so we want you to be part of that conversation. 410-454-0500. So Anthony McCarthy and I are here with you at this moment. We're about to have a ranging conversation about the tragedy that happened in Tucson, Arizona, where people were killed, gunned down. Congressman wounded. She shot in the brain. A 9-year-old girl was killed. A sitting federal judge, a Republican conservative sitting federal judge, was killed just because he wanted to show up. What does this say about America and where we're going and who we are as a society? Your thoughts on that at 410-319-8888. The first part of the program, we are joined by Wayne Gilchrist, who for 18 years served the Maryland's 1st District on the Eastern Shore as a Republican congressman. And he saw this country go from a place of dialogue and conversation to something else and had his own issues inside his own party because of what happened to extreme kind of thinking everywhere. And agrees to join us today from his home for a bit for this conversation. Wayne, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you, Mark. Good to be here. And thanks for putting this on the air.
I think it's important for us to have this conversation, and you're the first person I thought about because I'd like just to have your perspective as a man who ran as a fiscally conservative Republican with a very open social mind when you ran for Congress and served in Congress in those 18 years. What do you think? What has happened to us politically in these 18 years that led to Tucson?
You know, the first I heard of the incident, this tragedy creates a depth of sadness that is like an open sore in a wound for a while. And our thoughts and our prayers and our condolences go out to the families of everyone that was involved in this terrible tragedy. And so you think about those things for a while, those who are wounded and those who have died, and the family and friends who are gathered around either a funeral parlor or the hospital, hoping for the best. I served with Gabrielle for the last few years of my time in Congress, and I can tell you that she was a woman who was competent, very smart, knowledgeable, patient. She had courage. She was what America wants as a member of Congress. And I'm just hoping for the best that she will, God willing, be able to serve again. The tragedy, though, brings out very old wounds in America from before, during, and certainly after the American Revolution, the Articles of Confederation, the Constitution. That's one of the reasons the Constitution was amended so many times to ensure equality and justice, and people were protected by the law. The past intolerances that are historic in America, whether it be political or racial or certainly the Civil War or religious intolerance that's peppered throughout our history, it is time now, God knows, for us in the 21st century, for members of Congress, to tone down the rhetoric and become more knowledgeable on the issues so that when they debate these issues, they can have a rigorous debate that's based on real factual information and a clear understanding of what Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes said way back in the 1890s, that the Constitution was made for people with fundamentally differing views, that the debate is about bringing your facts and information to the table, not for calling the other side the enemy or demonizing the other side or even putting the other side on your website in the crosshairs of a rifle scope. That has got to stop. So it's in our history, this kind of tragic violence, this kind of intolerance. But it's time now that we get away from that.
Congressman, this is Anthony McCarthy. I want to ask you about being a moderate. And I was watching today, I was on so many sites today doing research on this issue. Mm-hmm. And for a lot of the, I want to call them activists, but, you know, everyone has the right to be an activist. But a lot of the activists who lean to the right, a lot of the rhetoric is real cut and dry. I was reading some things that some of the more conservative activists were saying about the senator from Massachusetts, Scott Brown, and how the Tea Party was a great supporter of Scott Brown, and now they're moving to oppose him in his reelection because they don't believe that he is conservative enough. Speak to us, because you were just one of those beloved congressmen in your district and really in the entire state. As someone who covered you in Washington, you were beloved by the political class of the entire state because of your compassion, but also because of your real clear point of view on many things. But it appears that politics has become so coarse that a moderate like Wayne Gilchrist cannot survive in this kind of environment.
Well, first of all, and I understand how you have to use the term moderate, conservative, and liberal.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
but you have to use that in order for people to understand. You're creating a frame of reference upon which we can continue this discussion.
Yeah.
The problem is that frame of reference becomes nailed to the wall. And that frame of reference of liberal, conservative, or moderate then becomes the key point in the debate instead of information, instead of the detail, instead of factual assessment, instead of being objective in your analysis of the information that you yourself has researched, instead of being given talking points by some staffer who probably got those talking points literally from the industry that wants a particular vote, whether it's the airline industry or the healthcare industry or the construction industry or the oil industry or the mining industry, you name it, it's out there. So what America has got to start doing is not relying on other people to give them information, whether it's even a newspaper or whether it's on a computer. People have to take the responsibility to try to dig up information themselves. That's what a democracy is about. Ben Franklin said ignorance and democracy are not compatible, and they aren't compatible. And so what happens is we're reacting to information without doing our own assessment of how reliable that information is. Now, it has become immensely coarse, whether it's the Tea Party or whether it's a far-left group, a far-right group. Our debate has become coarse. I was on the House floor for many years, and I heard the coarse debate coming from all sides. But what has to happen now? The leadership of both parties have to take America back, have to take the political dialogue and debate back from from people who are not legitimate, from people who are not competent, from people who have no integrity, from people who are not knowledgeable. I'll tell you right now that Hannity, Rush Limbaugh, Glenn Beck, I'll even say Sarah Palin, having served in Congress for those many years, having done enormous and rigorous research on the issues before I spoke on those issues, those people don't know what they're talking about. And they're doing a great disservice to America by rallying the crowd. And I've been in Republican conferences in the Capitol some years ago, this is not John Boehner, where the leadership of the Republican Party spoke about the Democrats as the enemy. That's simply not true. It's ridiculous. It's not understanding the depth of how a democratic system works. So, and I'm not, you know, I'm not blaming a few politicians or a few radio talk show hosts for the incident that occurred tragically in Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's multiple contributing factors, but the rhetoric in this nation from the politicians is part of the problem. And certainly, it's a mental health issue that we're looking at now. It's a guns issue. It's a multiple issue. And anybody that's really interested in solving this problem has to see the big picture and then begin to look at the details of this, of the issues.
Wayne, I thought about you because I know that you and your serving as a congressman from the 1st District in the state of Maryland partially were a victim of that in the attacks you received from the right.
Sure, yeah.
And there's a viciousness going on now that is pretty, I think, frightening. I'd like to listen to, as long as we have Wayne here, until we turn to our Arizona guest, to join us here at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Your thoughts on what just happened here. I mean, you can't blame – I had this conversation just on the air with somebody. You cannot blame Sarah Palin or Rush Limbaugh or Glenn Beck for the killing that took place. But in the larger context, it's the climate we're creating. That I think that is becoming really very dangerous, and that – and I hope this is not the tip of the iceberg and this is just an incident that happened. The fear, as many people have, is that this there is such a divide, such anger – that's so deep on so many levels that this may be the tip of the iceberg, and I certainly hope it's not. I mean, what's your analysis about what you think we've come to and what this really is?
Oh, you're asking me, Mark?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you had another guest.
No.
There's multiple contributing factors, and these kinds of things happen. So you're right. We can't blame an individual or the media or political rhetoric, but believe me, I traveled my district when there was very coarse political rhetoric, and I was in one town meeting where I was talking about my view of Iran and the war in the Middle East and Iraq, and at that point, I was very much opposed to the Bush doctrine and his policy in the Middle East. And when I was done, and it was about a two-hour thing, and people asked a lot of questions, I was a bit of a distance from this college back to the parking lot, and I drove myself, and someone followed me all the way back. And I knew that I was being followed. When I got to my little black pickup, I said, can I answer another question for you? He says, no, but and I'll just say this, but you encouraged me to make greater contributions to AIPAC. Now, my dialogue in that town meeting was in opposition to Israeli policy. Mm. And so he followed me all the way back to my pickup to tell me that. And that was, you know, after how heated the war debate got after a while. And I was called all kinds of names. And actually, in some cases, I was pushed around. Now, I tell you, I push back physically. But what's happened is, and that was some year, that was a few years ago, but it has even become more coarser and more urgent. And I've seen many people, even after I got out of Congress, who still feel very strongly about a number of things. I would always stop and begin to ask questions in a calm manner, because unfortunately, most people with too strong a passion on this, with a great deal of intolerance, have the least amount of information available to them. This thing really is about information. It's about being knowledgeable about what you believe in. There's three things that are really enemies to democracy and the spirit of a good debate. That's ignorance, that's dogma, quotes that have always ignorance and dogma and arrogance.
Mm-hmm.
Ignorance, arrogance, and dogma. And what the political leadership has to do is replace ignorance with knowledge, good information, replace arrogance with humility when they speak, and replace dogma with tolerance. So that's the pillars upon which America was founded by people like Jefferson and Madison and Adams and Washington. They were knowledgeable, they had humility, and they had tolerance. So this is what the, I would say that that's got to be the theme of our political leadership.
Well, Gilchrist, I want to tell you that I am, again, my disclaimers, you and I have become very good friends over the years since you first appeared on my show almost 18 years ago. And I have a great deal of respect, though, for you as a politician, as someone of honesty and integrity. And I thank you so much for the service you've done to our country as a U.S. congressman and also as a United States Marine when you were a decorated, wounded veteran of that war as well. So
you know what the most important thing is, though, Mark, and the thing I'm most proud of, which is really the most important thing, raising children. That's the most important thing people can do. You know, I'm glad I was in the Marine Corps. I'm sort of glad I was in Congress. I could have done some more productive things those 18 years. But, I'm proud of you, and this is a great show, and this is a good airing for this issue. So I just wanted to say that my condolences go out to the family members and those caught up in this tragic event. And thanks again, Mark, for having me on.
Thank you, Wayne. We look forward to you being a regular part of the show.
Okay. Thank you.
Take care.
Take care.
Former Congressman Wayne Gilchrist, perspective from someone who served as 18 years as a Republican congressman, who was literally forced out by the right wing, a man who tried to find, he didn't say that here, but he created a caucus with African-American Democratic Congressman Gavin Meeks from New York City called the Dialogue Caucus to create conversation between sides.
And Mark, it's interesting that he was much more, he has incredible conviction about where he stands and who he is. I wish more of our elected leaders knew who they were, not just politically, but as human beings. But the thing that I find amazing is that it's almost tangible, Mark, the coarseness of political dialogue. I see it at City Hall, even there. When people come in, there is a hatefulness about issues, whether we're talking about abortion, whether we're talking about guns, whether we're talking about economic development, or we're talking about education. The lines are so black and white in the eyes of some people. There is a sense of entitlement on both sides, I would say. As he said, the dialogue and the knowledge gets lost because people don't educate themselves. The electeds don't educate themselves. And then there's a lot of emotion that goes with a lot of folks who advocate on certain issues. And if you're not on their side, as he said, you're the enemy. It's not that you have a disagreement or that you have a different perspective than I do. You're my enemy. And I'm not sure how we get things done in that kind of political environment.
We're getting on the phone with our new guest coming in here, but I want our listeners to join us to respond to what Anthony was saying at 410-319-8888, because what happened in Arizona is a flame of hatred that's been mounting in this country, whether it's putting things up with crosshairs on websites, as Sarah Palin did and others who have talked about using weapons and using the terminology of warfare and murder and killing in our political conversations, and how this contributes to the mindset. Yeah, this kid who did this is out of his mind. But
without question.
He was also a terrorist. You know, one thing we also don't do in this country is that when somebody white commits an act like this, they're mentally unbalanced, they are an unemployed, right-winger, disgruntled felon, they're this and that. But never, you have to be a person of color to become a terrorist, I think, in America. And so that's part of the divide that happened here. And it's also we have creating a world of real fear and hatred. And I think that that's not it. I mean, you can believe what you believe and fight hard for what you believe in and even give your life for it if you believe in it, as Martin Luther King and others have said they would do and did. But what's happening here now is just, it's beyond the pale. And I think that guns are a big part of the problem as well. And so we want to hear from some voices from Arizona in the next 15, 20 minutes of our show. We are joined by Brian Kaplan. He was a volunteer in the Gabrielle Giffords campaign for Congress. He is an employment coordinator at Lutheran Social Services in the Department of Refugee and Immigration Services in Tucson, Arizona. I discovered him because his sister lives here in Baltimore and was on Facebook this morning. I wrote her and said, I'd love to talk to your brother. And she gave us his information, and he was also interviewed by the New York Times. I understand. Brian Kaplan, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
I do appreciate it. And soon we'll also be joined by Kat Rodriguez, who is Program Director of Derechos Humanos in Tucson. And in Spanish, Derechos Humanos means human rights. And she'll be with us in a few minutes. You all can join us here at 410-319-8888 as well. Brian, so you worked in the Giffords campaign.
Well, I worked not for the campaign. I work with Lutheran Social Services. We resettle refugees. And Gabrielle Giffords was very close to our organization.
I'm just curious. I know this is very hard for you and everybody else in Tucson, especially people who are close to Congresswoman Giffords and her work. But can you give us a sense of the tenor, the tension, the sense of the moment in Tucson, right, left, in the middle? What's going on, the rhetoric of the community at the moment in the wake of this?
Well, we just came out of the most hateful campaign that I can ever remember in my lifetime. I'm a retired school teacher. I taught school for over 30 years. I've been around a long time. But I have never seen such hateful rhetoric as was aimed at Gabrielle Giffords in this last campaign. I was just looking at Facebook today. Someone had posted something that I had forgotten about. And she ran against this man called Jesse Kelly.
Right.
And he advertised during the campaign for a fundraiser, come and shoot a fully loaded automatic M16 to help raise money. And this is just the type of campaign that we had here. You know, constantly speaking about guns, constantly speaking about hatred. I do have to agree with Sheriff Dupnik, who has said that we have now become the mecca for hate for the United States.
He's the sheriff of Pima County, where Tucson resides.
That is correct. Right.
Which is a county right on the border, for our listeners here on the East Coast don't know, right on the border of Mexico and the United States of America.
Right. We're very close to the border, and so he's very familiar with all border issues.
So,
this is Anthony McCarthy,
Brian,
my co-host today.
I'm curious if you could give us some insight. We've been reading, you know, there's been so much written about her political Congresswoman Giffords' political philosophy. She's been called a moderate Democrat. Give us a sense, and the listeners to the Mark Steiner Show, your insight on the politics of that district. I mean, I watched a clip of the congresswoman over the weekend on one of the many, obviously, news programs that were focusing in on the assassination attempt on the congresswoman. Tell us about her political philosophy. I mean, the right, obviously. Go ahead.
We like to say sometimes that Tucson is a blue island in a red state. Gabby was always there. We have one area in town called Fourth Avenue, and it's a very popular pedestrian area. I was down there a few years ago with a friend to go out for happy hour. We ran into Gabby on the street. She was walking with some people from school board members, and just stopped down the street just to chat with us. She wasn't in any rush. And that's the climate that we have in Tucson, you know, that you can just go up and meet your legislator.
Mm-hmm.
We are not a large city. We were always able to do this. And now it's really frightening that this may come to an end, that we will not feel mm-hmm. so comfortable. What Gabrielle did for me and my community is, as I said, I work with refugees. And every time a refugee was able to find a job, Gabrielle would write a note to the employer thanking them for hiring a refugee and giving them their first opportunity. The man who first put me in contact with Gabrielle was Gabe Zimmerman, who unfortunately was killed on Saturday. And my contact in her office is Pam Simon, who is now recovering in the hospital. So it's affected the whole community.
Just we're going to take a very brief break and come right back, and I have a lot of other questions for our guest, Brian Kaplan, and my producer, Justin Levy, just said Kat Rodriguez from Derechos Humanos in Tucson will be with us in just a moment as well. We want you to join us here at 410-319-8888. Reflect on what just happened this weekend, what it says to all of us in the United States of America. We'll be back to take your calls about all of that in just a moment, so please don't go away. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner.
And I'm Anthony McCarthy.
Remind you now, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by Urbanite Magazine's new e-zines. It's a simple way to stay connected to the topics and events you care about most. Daily contents in arts, culture, food design, style, green living, and much more can be delivered to your inbox. Registration is available at UrbaniteBaltimore.com. And on our way back to the conversation, I want to remind everyone to please join us this Wednesday for the Annapolis Summit. You can call 410-454-0500. Or go to summitatsteinershow.org to join me, the governor, the president of the Senate, Speaker of the House. I'll tell you more about that at the end of the hour again. But right now, let me reintroduce our guests. Brian Kaplan, volunteer, worked with the Gabriel Giffords campaign. He's an employment coordinator for the Lutheran Social Services, Department of Refugee and Immigration Services in Tucson, Arizona. We're also now joined by Kat Rodriguez, who is program director for Derechos Humanos in Tucson, which in in Spanish is human rights in Tucson. And Brian, welcome with us, staying with us. And Kat Rodriguez, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So, coming back to where we left off, and also opening the lines here, 410-319-8888, one of the things I think that is so shocking, and we'll talk about Arizona in a moment, and what you were just saying earlier, Brian, echoing the sheriff's comments, is that Gabriel Giffords was outspoken. People seem to be a good congressperson. But she was a moderate conservative, not nice conservative, a moderate Democrat, not a progressive Democrat. She wasn't part of the progressive caucus in Capitol Hill. Yet she was
known as a blue dog Democrat.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. So blue dog Democrat. Yet she was attacked viciously by her opponents and in the right and targeted in many ways, literally and figuratively, in some media. So let me start, since we haven't heard from Kat Rodriguez, if we start with you on this one, then go to Brian, what an atmosphere is like that creates venom against a candidate like that?
Well, because Jesse Kelly was way more conservative, and there was a huge push this last election season. This is probably the ugliest election season I've ever seen. It was absolutely disheartening. But she was pretty conservative. I personally didn't agree with a lot of her stance on more border militarization and others. So she was seen as very moderate. But when you're talking about a district that was former Jim Colby's district and is very conservative, a lot of retired folks, mostly higher income, not a whole lot of people of color. She was not conservative enough.
Mm. Brian?
I don't think that the Kelly campaign or the Republican Party saw her as blue dog or conservative or moderate. They just saw her and targeted her literally as the enemy. He came across as a bully in every meeting that they had and just did nothing but incite the crowds to yell and scream at her.
I think a lot, this is Anthony McCarthy, I think a lot of people are curious, and maybe you, Kat, or Brian could explain to us, I hope this isn't considered in any way distasteful, but I'm very curious, the federal judge who was murdered on Saturday, as we look at his record, as we look at some of his writings, he's considered very conservative. And yet he was a Gabrielle Giffords supporter. Can any of you give us any insight into that?
Well, I think that Gabrielle did everything she could to reach across the aisle.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why the judge who happened to live in that neighborhood knew that she was going to be there and just wanted to stop off to say hello, because that is what Gabrielle did and hopefully will continue to do, is constantly reach across the aisle.
I wonder what you think about what this says about the state of politics. Let's start with Arizona. Let's start with Arizona, and then we'll go to the nation, because I'm just going to say this is emblematic of the nation or something special happening in Arizona. Kat Rodriguez, I mean, the Sheriff Dupnik has said that Arizona is tantamount to a breeding ground for racism and this kind of right-wing behavior from his perspective. Can you talk a bit about what it's like in Arizona for listeners who are not part of it?
Can I just add something to Mark's question real quick, Kat? Is this sure. This the national attention that was focused on Arizona and your governor around the immigration debate around Martin Luther King many years ago? I mean, it seems like your state is almost schizophrenic in its politics. But there is a national lens that just constantly, and now, of course, with this tragedy over the weekend, this national lens is constantly coming back to Arizona.
Well, Arizona has been selected, and it's not by mistake, as a laboratory. I mean, you're talking about $500,000 pumped into Arizona from outside of Arizona to pass some of the legislation that we've seen in the last couple of years. It's a mechanism. It's a very smart strategy, because you pick a state, you can get it to pass, and then you have a precedent. So then you can have other states. As right now, we have there were like 40 something states that were going to be mimicking some of the SB 1070. Some of them now are lining up to do the birthright citizenship. It's a strategy to create a precedent, and then you can push it through other ways. And I think that's why it should be suspicious. A lot of the money that's funding these campaigns are not coming from Arizonans, and it's not like this is what Arizona wants and we have to vote for it. This isn't what Arizonans want. It's what money has been pumped in a very intentional and a very strategic way to get these sort of legislation passed. And we've seen that since Prop 200 years ago. It was in 2004 that was, denying, quote, services to undocumented immigrants. It was Prop 187 that we saw in California remedied and fixed and pushed through, and they said it was lawsuit proof, and that was the strategy that they used. They were using us as a test, as a laboratory, to test out this legislation, and if it doesn't pass, they learn from those mistakes and they fix it for other states.
So I wonder what the two of you, as you reflect on what just occurred over the weekend, what this says about where America is at the moment. Not just Arizona, but Arizona maybe is emblematic, really, the rest of the country. We're not that – I mean, we can't be that different in New York or Washington State or Florida than we are in Arizona.
No, I agree with you. Well, one thing that came to mind when Kat was speaking was that I remember President Obama was saying, we're not red states, blue states, we're the United States. But this does not seem to be heard on the other side of the aisle at all. It seems that every piece of legislation that our state government is introducing is meant as a wedge, and it has just really made everything very polarized, one side or the other. They have done absolutely nothing to unite the state, but they have done everything to polarize and divide the state. And I see that happening at a national level also.
Kat?
I would agree with that. I mean, I think that if you look at Russell Pierce, who's the head of the Senate now, and some people say that he's really the one running the state, all of the things he's pushing through, I mean, they're not helping our economy. We're like 49th in the nation in education. We have lots of problems that should be addressed, and yet he consistently is attacking immigrants. We have spent the last year creating laws and legislation to attack Mexicans, to attack workers, just out straight out racism, and now that at the same time putting legislation in place to make it easier to access firearms. I mean, this is where we are. I hate to say it, but I don't think Arizona is like a lot of other places. I mean, I'm from Texas originally. You know, we grew up with guns. My father was in the military. You know, my dad was out here recently, and I said, hey, did you know that it's legal in Arizona to carry a gun into a bar? And he said, well, that's just stupid. I mean, that's really, we aren't in a lot of ways like the rest of the country because of, I think, outside interests that have put money into, they have a vested interest in getting some of their agenda. And we're not talking about just like anti-immigrant. We're talking about white supremacist groups, one of which apparently this man who shot Gabrielle Giffords was a member of. It's called American Renaissance. They're extremely anti-Semitic, very anti-immigrant. And I'm not sure if that's been confirmed yet, but from what I heard, he was listed as a member on their site or something. So that should be of concern to people. It's not about, you know, just about we don't like Mexicans. We're talking about white power groups that are seeing Arizona, like when the Minuteman Project was out here, the KKK said that Arizona was fertile recruiting ground. That should scare people. That really should.
I watched an interview with Cindy McCain over the weekend, and she'll probably change her mind, as she did on same-sex marriage and a whole lot of other things once her husband puts her in check. But she said that she believes that her party, this should be a wake-up call that we have got to, the leadership of the Republican Party has to speak out against extremism. And it really struck me that people of reasonable minds, there's no way that anyone can say that the coarseness of the conversations that took place with Governor Brewer and other governors around the country as they were trying to understand what was going on in Arizona when it came to immigrants. And there was there's a coarseness that's almost unimaginable as we from the outside. Now, this is just my opinion. As we observe the extremists who seem to be in charge of your state government. And I'm wondering what common sense, practical people like Brian, well, he at least seems very reasonable, and you, Kat, are you having any headway in making a change in that kind of conversation into the dialogue that's taking place in state politics?
Well, first, I have to agree with you that John McCain will probably say something to Cindy if he can figure out what home she is living in.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
And you're absolutely right. It is up to our leaders on every level to set the tone. And our state government has not set the tone. They have not started talking about how wrong this is. And all they're saying is it's not our fault. You know, don't blame the Tea Party. But I don't see where we've made much headway in setting the correct tone at all. Kat, what do you think in the state?
No, I mean, we started out this year, 2011, already with plans to attack the 14th Amendment and with attacking ethnic studies, which has proven to increase the graduation rate of students of color and is specifically targeting Mexican-American students.
Did I read correctly this morning that Arizona state legislature is actually going to contemplate allowing people to carry guns on campus?
Yes.
They concealed want weapons?
Yes, instructors and qualified students to carry them. Can you imagine what would have happened at that shopping center if everyone was armed?
Wow.
There would have been more than six people laying on the ground.
My jaw did drop. I mean, when I saw that the law to carry concealed weapons on campus.
And that's another example of the divisiveness of the state, where when the law came out that you can now carry an unconcealed weapon into a restaurant, well, then all the signs started coming up in front of the restaurants. You can come in here with a gun. Oh. Or you're not allowed in here with a gun. And then all the letters to the editor, well, we're not going to go to this restaurant. We're going to go to that restaurant. So, again, it's bringing back what I said earlier, that our leaders have done nothing to unite the state. Everything that they do is very divisive.
410-319-8888 is number here. Let us go to Mike on line one. You're on the air. Hi, Mike. You're on the air.
Mike?
Yeah.
Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, that was quick. Look, how rare it is for me to disagree with Anthony, but I'm about to do so. I don't believe that Arizona is as exceptional as it's being portrayed. It's the vanguard of a dangerous right-wing movement that's active in the whole damn country. Sarah Palin targeted this congresswoman before this right-wing lunatic did. She inspired him. And that's what we're faced with. We have to turn this country around and take it away from the influence of these extreme right-wing forces that endanger us. Arizona, I know people from the Southwest, and they do have to live with difficulties. But so I'm from New York, and in New York is no picnic either. I don't know what you guys think, but Baltimore is the only perfect city in the country.
Yeah, right.
I mean, let's put it differently. This is as good as it gets. And
we do have the best crab cakes in the country.
Yes, we do.
Well, we got that. You're right. I mean, we're imperfect, but we got that. And I mean, the main thing is we're facing a political battle, and this got to wake people up. And they better figure out what to do, or our children are going to be lucky to survive it.
Mike, thank you so much.
All right.
Thank you.
It's okay to disagree with me and Mark.
Well, thank
we
you
like
so
that.
Much.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Mike. We have a lot of people calling in, so as soon as their names pop up on the screen here, I will get them on the air at 410-319-8888. And I think we'll try to bring in our other guests as well here in a few minutes. 410-319-8888 is the number here. I'm just going to call you by the wrong name. Kat, I wonder where you think this what happens next in Arizona? What happens next and how that fits for the rest of the nation? Because this really is, I mean, it will move beyond where we are. I mean, the work you're doing, perhaps this would be a good place to start, just for a moment for our listeners, very quickly, for Derechos Humanos in Tucson, to describe what it is that you do. Because I see on your website, that I was looking at earlier today, which people can connect to from our website, steinershow.org, and you have one thing on here where there's a number, 253 of Arizona recovered remains. So talk about what that means and what this website is and what your organization is.
Well, our organization is a nonprofit. We've existed as the Derechos Humanos since 1993, originally created to document law enforcement abuse, specifically Border Patrol. There was a lot of abuse happening. They were finding that a lot of the abuse was not being committed against migrants, but it was actually against Chicanos or Mexican-Americans. And so we started documenting it. We do Know Your Rights stuff. We teach people what are your rights when you're pulled over, what you should know. And that applies to anybody. We also do labor abuse, landlord-tenant housing. Basically, the anti-immigrant rhetoric in this country is such that people are made extremely vulnerable. I mean, we have people come in who are owed thousands of dollars for working, and it's their employers, you know, victimize them because they are undocumented. The number you're seeing on our website is what we call recovered remains. They're the number of people or the remains of people who have been recovered on the Arizona border. Since 1993, they estimate, you know, more than 5,000 people have died attempting to cross the border. And, you know, here in Arizona, it's more than 2,000 just since 2000. And this is something that nobody hears about. I mean, nobody outside of the border states even know that every year more than 200 remains are recovered in Arizona alone. You're talking about hyperthermia, hypothermia, exposure, victims of violence, rollovers. It's a horrific number. I mean, it's a human rights crisis, and we don't use that term lightly. And when you were talking, we call them recovered remains because they're not bodies. Some of them are pieces and parts of people because between the animals and the element, in a very short period of time, there's not much left of a person. And so our office works with the medical examiner's office to report missing people. You know, we do extensive interviews asking, did your brother ever go to the dentist? Did he have any birthmarks? I mean, it really is horrible. And to know that it's happening on U.S. soil, you can't help but ask, like, where's the outrage? This is absolutely horrific. And I think that most Americans, if they heard that this was happening in some other country, we would be like, oh, my God. This is horrible. You know, thank God we live in the United States. Well, this is happening just in Arizona. And we put that on our website, the list, to bring attention to it. We get our data directly from medical examiner's offices. We don't put it up there unless we get the list officially from them. And we're trying to bring attention to the fact that everybody's been funneled because of U.S. policy. Everything's been funneled into Arizona. And it's not by mistake that most people are crossing the border through Arizona. It's not by mistake that people are dying that way. This is the way our government planned to deal with the, quote, immigration problem.
Let me go back to the phones here. And I think we've also just been joined by another guest, Karen Dolan, who is director of the Cities for Peace and Cities for Progress programs at the Institute for Policy Studies, and Karen wrote an interesting piece that's on the Institute for Policy Studies website this morning. And one of the closing thoughts you had was, this climate of hate threatens us all. Karen, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Could you talk a bit about that, where you ended up in this piece that you wrote and what you're telling us?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's been a lot out there on casting blame and so forth. And I think that while people can't say necessarily with the information that we know so far that Loeffner was following any particular directions that he perceived directly from any politician or public figure, and he was clearly a disturbed young man. But at the same time, I don't think that there can be no responsibility on the part of people like Tea Party spokes, people who have, in fact, created the crosshairs, that have put these targets on the heads of politicians, that, in fact, put the crosshairs over the district of Gabrielle Giffords, of Sharon Engel, who was talking about people taking Second Amendment remedies, that these kinds of speech are not without consequences. And while I'm not saying that they pulled the trigger or can be held personally responsible, this kind of rhetoric is wrong, and this kind of rhetoric is irresponsible, and even more so when it's on the part of public figures to whom many people listen. And for somebody who is unstable or even just angry, this kind of rhetoric can push them over the edge.
What do the three of you think, though, about people who are also saying that people from the progressive liberal end of the spectrum are fanning the flames themselves by directing this at the right and by conservative forces?
Well, I mean, it depends what somebody means about directing it at the right. There is just an objective fact that this kind of target practice and talk about Second Amendment remedies and putting people in crosshairs is something that took place over this last election period, that this is something that came from the right. Now, to say, did they pull the trigger, was this young man following directions from them? No, I don't think that's right, and I don't think it's responsible for people from either side of the spectrum to say that. But we do have to point out the political climate in which this happened and the irresponsibility of the rhetoric from these high-profile public officials.
And I think that one of the things that I was, when you started off your piece that I read this morning, Karen, was that starting off with the young girl who was murdered in this, it was just Christina Taylor Greene. I think that just affected a lot of people in America, the innocence that, and the people in their 70s who were there, just there to find out about their Medicare rights, the complete innocence, not that everybody wasn't innocent, but the complete innocence that was just mowed down in this process was just, go ahead, I'm sorry.
That really, you know, struck at the heartstrings of every parent. I'm the parent.
Oh, my God.
You know, and I take my son to political events, and one should want to. And that, I think that that's the point, that here's this young life that was so full of hope that herself may one day have become a Gabrielle Giffords and won't have that chance. And I also wanted to point out that this happens, yes, it happens every day in this country, that innocent children are killed, that people are caught in the crosshairs. But what makes this different, from my perspective, is that these were deliberately crafted crosshairs. This was political rhetoric that raised the level of dangerousness for all of us, including innocent people like Christina Taylor Greene. And that, to me, adds another level of tragedy to this already tragic situation.
Anthony and I have our three guests with us here. These are Karen Dolan, Kat Rodriguez, Brian Kaplan. Let's go get some calls in here before we get to the top of the hour. And Clarence, you're on the air.
What call are you?
I'm well. Welcome.
The most profound statement I've heard in the media in my lifetime, I think, was when Sarah Palin said something in reference to a brownie being in the White House and Browning could solve the problem. Now, in my overall responsibility in these types of inflammatory statements, because in my mindset, a responsible person, a leader, an ex-governor who would make an inflammatory statement like that should have automatically been outcast. And anybody else that would seek to gain political gains or financial gains and make a public statement, knowing full well that some people would take things like this serious. The media is part of the overall problem, if not the problem. That's just my opinion.
Okay, and I hear you, Clarence. I'm not familiar with that quote by Sarah Palin. I mean, I think that anything, what I remember is during the campaign when people in her rally were yelling, kill him or lynch him.
Mm-hmm.
She said nothing to the crowd about this is not the way that Americans think about the people who run for president of the United States of America or anything like that.
And I'm not, if I may be wrong here, and I'm sure Brian or Kat or Karen may correct me, but during the health care debate in a lot of states, those town hall meetings just went haywire, and there was such hatefulness directed to members of Congress about the president's health care bill. But the interesting thing that I thought we were in a very dangerous place, Mark, was when people started showing up at those rallies carrying weapons. And the Secret Service was in a quandary about what to do because people were saying, well, they have a right to carry weapons. But they saw it as a direct threat at the president or members of Congress. And we find ourselves at a very interesting place politically in this country right now.
And we only have less than a minute left. Actually, we don't have any time left. I've just got a sign on my screen that says break. Karen Dolan, I appreciate you taking this time with us at the end of our program today.
Thank you so much.
And you can connect to what she's written on our website, stanoshow.org. Kath Rodriguez and Brian Kaplan, thank you both so much for being with us as well today. It's been sorry for the tragedy to all of us, especially in your state. But thank you for being with us and for the work that you do.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you all for calling in already. And thank my dear friend Anthony McCarthy, of course, for being with me again here on
Monday. I'm so excited about our summit on Wednesday, Mark.
Summit, Wednesday. I want you to join us Wednesday morning in Annapolis, January the 12th at the Calvert House. I'll be there with Governor Martin O'Malley, Senate President Mike Miller, House Speaker Mike Bush. You can join us by calling 410-454-0500 or go to summit@steinershow.org. That's 410-454-0500. Reserve your seat. Come join us. We'll be there, sponsored, of course, by WEA and here Morgan State University, Stevens University, Greater Baltimore Committee, and the Maryland State Teachers, Maryland State Education Association, and our print partners, of course, in this effort, as they have been for the last 8 years, the Baltimore Business Journal. 410-454-0500. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. We're produced by Justin Levy and Christina Aris, and we're engineered by Zachary Coleman. Our interns today are Christina Grimes and Naomi Wasson. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again, podcast any of our past shows, hear new additional interviews, and find out information about our guests and their work, visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for public radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.